Our fourth case for this morning is United States against Morales. And we'll begin with Mr. Babbitt.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. In this case, the government withheld two critical emails from the defense and the jury. Both emails speak to the key issue in the case. Who did it? Was it Mr. Morales, or was it his fugitive son? For years, Mr. Morales ran a legitimate credit card processing business. There are no allegations that Mr. Morales ever used this business for fraud. But in 2003, Mr. Morales wanted to retire, and his son took over the business. There's no dispute that the son used the business as a front for a check fraud, or that Mr. Morales worked at the business during that fraud.
Isn't there quite a bit of evidence apart from emails that you're talking about to suggest that Mr. Morales Sr. was, in fact, profiting from this fraud, you know, evidence showing how much money he's putting in his personal accounts, the contract between Walter Correa and IPS and his handwriting and so on? I can't remember all of it, but it seems to me there was a fair amount of evidence that links Mr. Morales Sr. to the fraudulent operation.
Your Honor, this evidence links Mr. Morales Sr. to the business that he was working at with his son. It does not link him directly to the fraud, and it does not
provide
direct...
The whole business was a fraud, wasn't it?
Excuse me?
The whole business was a fraud.
IPS committed a fraud, and it was at the direction of the son. That's correct.
But it was...
There's no dispute about that.
But it was Mr. Morales who made the decision, I believe, to deposit that $11,000 in fraudulent checks the very day after the search warrant, at which time his knowledge of the fraud would have been absolutely undeniable. So...
Your Honor, I believe you're referring to, as you said, the $11,000 that was deposited the day after the search. And that can be wholly consistent with the entire defense theory that all of this was done at the direction of the son. After the search...
Well, wait. How? It's the father who's...
The father makes the deposit.
Father started the business, didn't he? The business was allegedly to lease equipment, but they didn't have any equipment to lease. They
yes,
just
Your Honor.
Used the information to take money out of people's bank accounts.
Yeah, and there's no dispute that IPS committed a fraud here. But what's important...
Well, they not only committed a fraud, they were a fraud.
The son directed a fraud at IPS, but what's critical here is that for years before that, Mr. Morales had run his own legitimate credit card processing business.
No, I understand that, but what I'm trying to get at is, in light of the evidence, and I'll be surprised if you're going to try to push and say there's no evidence that Mr. Morales Sr. was aware of the fraudulent character of IPS. Then we have this email, and you know, I know you're emphasizing the government says they caught him red-handed, and this email from Agent Kane says, according to the daughter, she was entering items in the computer. But part of the analysis that we have to engage in is whether that is something that could possibly have made a difference to the outcome of this case. And it does strike me, it's got layers of hearsay in it. Kane isn't saying, I saw her entering. It says... The daughter says, in fact, according to the daughter, she was entering the items. And I don't know. It seems to me like there's quite a bit that would have to overcome before a Brady violation could be found. And that strikes me as your key thing. The April 15th email, I'm not too impressed with the June 9th one, but the April 15th, you can say what you want to say.
Yes, Your Honor. And as I'm saying, there's no doubt that a fraud occurred here, but the key issue is whether there's the evidence linking Mr. Morales and his knowledge of the fraud. He was working at the business with his son as he was going into retirement. And let's just take, for example, when he first learned of these angry customers, that the evidence, the record shows that wasn't even until a year into the fraud that was occurring. And how did he react? He reacted angry, and he reacted mad.
And he's mad that they're getting caught.
He was surprised. The receptionist that he had been working with for several years said that he was surprised. And worse, after that, the son actively tried to conceal the fraud from his father. As in the weeks leading up to the search, this was just a few weeks before the search, the record shows.
What happened to the son, by the way?
Is he still gone?
The son was never apprehended, and he remains a fugitive. He was indicted in this case, and he was never found. The son remains at large.
And they found Mr. Morales Sr. in California, is that right?
That's correct. He was indicted, and then I believe he had moved to California for family reasons, and they were able to arrest him a few months later.
I'm trying to figure something out about this April 2009 email, and you can help me. I know that. Because you argued that it could have been used to discredit Agent Kane because it indicates that the daughter was sitting in the back office and that he testified she was near the entrance. But I was trying to figure out where in that email does it give any indication of her location. If by describing the open laptop in the back office and not indicating that someone was sitting there using it, doesn't the email in fact indicate that no one was in the office at the laptop at that time? I mean, it just isn't getting through to me.
Your email, Your Honor, the email, the face of the email says, quote, according to the daughter, she was entering items into the computer. And so we would argue that to us that's indicating that she's sitting at the computer typing in the information.
It says the laptop was on a small desk beside his. According to the daughter, she was entering in items in the computer.
That's correct.
So. But why wouldn't he have, I mean, why didn't he call the daughter? I mean, he was in the office, too. Why is this, actually, as the government suggests, even information that was not already available to him?
Your Honor, the decision to call the daughter is obviously a complex defense strategy decision here. And I was not the trial counsel. I don't know why the daughter was not called here. But I can certainly say that there's many pieces of evidence here. There's complex family relationships, obviously, at play here. And the decision to call her or not call her could have been entirely influenced by a piece of evidence like this piece of evidence, which would suggest that, indeed, someone else was entering these items, completely contrary to what the government argued in its opening and its closing statements.
It caught red-handed, according to, I guess, your theory seems to mean that it's Mr. Morales Sr. who's actually typing at the laptop?
That's exactly what the government said in its opening and closing arguments. It said that Mr. Morales was caught red-handed. It said, quote, he was entering items. It said that he was the one typing. The government said that in the opening and the closing.
I'm not going to give up because I need to sleep tonight. The email never states that the daughter was in the back office at the computer at the time the agents entered it. In fact, the description of what they saw inside Morales' office describes only an open laptop. The description of the laptop and the failure to describe any person sitting next to it or working on it on that implies the exact opposite of what you seem to be arguing. I mean, it implies that she was not in Morales' personal office when they entered. The only mention of the daughter in that email is that she stated she was entering items in a computer. So
yes, Your Honor, and that's the computer that they're referring to, Your Honor. But your point does go to illustrate part of the problem here, is that this evidence was disclosed after trial, and we never had a chance to ask Mr. Agent Kane about these kinds of issues, or in fact, have the daughter testify to those issues at trial. I see that my time is... I'd like to reserve, please. Thank you.
Come on up.
All right, thank you. Mr. Burke.
May it please the Court, Matt Burke on behalf of the United States. The government acknowledged in the district court below that it inadvertently failed to turn over two emails prior to trial. Notwithstanding that mistake, the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion for new trial because there is no reasonable probability that either of these emails individually or collectively would have created a reasonable probability of a different verdict in this case.
But how do you reconcile that notion with the government's emphasis, as counsel has said, with the theory, mistaken it seems to be, that it was Mr. Morales Sr. who was actively entering phony information into the computer system at the time of the search?
You're correct. In hindsight, I certainly wish the government had not made that argument, and it does seem inconsistent with the information that is in the email. And that was an inadvertent mistake by the government.
But couldn't it have influenced the jury? I mean, Brady is not a standard that has to do with the government's good faith or bad faith or anything else.
I agree wholeheartedly, Your Honor. There are three reasons why there's no reasonable probability of a different result. First of all, this is not a situation in which the government would have been deprived wholly of the ability to point to that computer screen, even if the daughter had testified at trial. I am the one who was typing on that computer screen. The government still could have and would have been in a position to make a similar argument about why that computer screen was circumstantial evidence that the defendant knowingly participated in the fraud. And that's what we need to prove. We don't need to prove that he's the guy at the keyboard. Well, we just have to prove he's one of the people.
That's right.
And so I think on that point, what we still could have said was, okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's the daughter who was typing on the computer screen, but he's still in the office with the door closed with her.
And the question, though, is would that case have sounded materially different to the jury? The jury hears a case where we caught him red-handed. He was typing it in. There is other evidence, I believe, in the record to show that Mr. Morales Sr. was involved. So this isn't a Rule 29-type case.
Certainly.
This is a could it have influenced the jury's assessment.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly, Your Honor. That is the test. It's not a sufficiency test. But point one is we still would have made a similar argument even about that computer screen. Point number two is, as your honors, I think, have all pointed out, the other evidence that the government emphasized in closing was extensive. I mean, this was a point that we did emphasize, but it was only one point among many other very powerful pieces of evidence, all of which we highlighted and hammered upon during the closing argument. We hammered upon the fraudulent contract that the defendant himself forged in the defendant's handwriting.
The Correa?
Walter Correa. Yeah. You know, the Walter Correa contract, which is in the defendant's handwriting, which is a completely fabricated, fictitious contract, which was faxed from the fax machine in the defendant's private office, and not once at trial, not in cross-examination, not in closing argument, and not even here on appeal, has the defense ever offered any possible innocent interpretation of that piece of evidence. Because there is no possible innocent interpretation of that piece of evidence. You can't forge a contract by mistake. That's devastating evidence that he knowingly participated in the fraud. We also hammered, in closing, on the point that there was $490,000 in fraud proceeds coming from a company that did no legitimate business whatsoever, going into accounts where the defendant was a signatory and where his son was not a signatory, or to pay loans and leases where the defendant was a signatory and his son was not.
So can I guess that his theory, I mean, I'm not asking you to make his argument, but, I mean, money, if you run a business, comes into your accounts, and I'm not sure that you know personally whether, you know, what the source of, I mean, if it had been a legitimate business, maybe he still would have had the same amount of input into the accounts. That's the question. I mean, that's his argument, as I think. You know, yes, money was coming into my account, and it was really my account, but how was I supposed to know it was fraud proceeds as opposed to legitimate earnings?
Well, Your Honor, because somebody has to control that flow of funds. Somebody has to make the decision that, yes, we're going to give this money to him. And you don't decide to give nearly $500,000 in fraud proceeds from a company that doesn't do legitimate business.
So how does the government trace, you know, where did the money come from and who makes the deposit? And
the evidence in trial was through, there was extensive bank records, and then there were summary charts, and then there was testimony by Bruce Killian, a financial investigator. And what we had is we had summary charts which showed fraudulent withdrawals out of the accounts of all these victims, through the financial intermediaries, into the bank accounts of IPS, and then from there showed $490,000 of money from IPS into accounts, and exclusively into, and the only accounts that were included in this $490,000 figure are accounts where the defendant is a signatory and where his son is not, or to pay loans and leases where the defendant is a signatory and his son is not. I mean, and you know, the evidence that an individual is benefiting enormously from a fraud is very powerful evidence that he is a knowing participant in the fraud, especially in a case where the business isn't doing anything legitimate. But in addition to the fraudulent lease and all of the financial evidence, we also had the testimony of Carmen Donaire, the secretary, who said on two separate occasions, I told him, once in May of 2004 and again before the execution of the search warrant, I told him people are constantly calling in to complain about the fact that we're taking money out of their accounts without their permission. And he just kept right on working. We hammered on that point in closing. We also talked about in closing the fact that there was all this handwriting evidence in the defendant's distinctive handwriting, and there was never a dispute that it was his handwriting, showing he's the one that's devising this five-check bad check collection service, which service did not exist. All of the victims testified, I never received bad check collection service, and many of them testified, I've never even heard of IPS. There was also extensive evidence showing him tracking the finances of IPS, showing him recruiting people to go out and pitch this phony scam to IPS.
What evidence was presented that he, as opposed to anyone else, deposited the 11,000 in fraudulent checks?
We had the deposit slip from the bank records from the day after the search.
Uh-huh.
We had testimony from a bank records custodian who explained that, yes, that actually means July 28th. That date is exact, uh-huh. is July 28th. And we had testimony from we also had handwriting exemplars that when you compare them to the handwriting on the deposit slip,
uh-huh.
show that it is the defendant's handwriting. And okay. in closing, the defense never said that's not my handwriting.
Okay.
They basically conceded that our identification of the handwriting was correct, but essentially asked the jury to ignore it. And as you point out, Judge Rovner, by that point, after his business, after he's been told on multiple occasions about people repeatedly calling with angrily saying money is being taken out of our accounts, and after his business is raided by a team of three or four Secret Service agents and three or four FBI agents who come in and scour the place and collect up, you know, hundreds of pages of documents from every room and cabinet, that after that, the next day, he goes out and deposits an additional $11,000 in fraudulent checks. That's very powerful evidence. And, Judge Wood, to your point, in closing, the government expressly stated that it was not hanging its hat on this, the evidence regarding the computer screen. In closing, we expressly stated, even if you ignore everything else, including this evidence regarding the computer screen, the evidence still proves that he knowingly participated in the fraud, specifically because he's the one that goes out and deposits those checks. And so for all of those reasons, Your Honor, there's no reasonable probability. And lastly, we're here on abuse of discretion review. It's a deferential standard. The district court had the best grasp of the strength of the evidence and how this may or may not have affected anything. And given the overwhelming evidence and all of the points the government emphasized in closing, certainly the district court did not abuse its discretion in finding that there was no reasonable probability of a different result. If there are no further questions.
No, apparently not. Thank you.
The government respectfully requests that this court affirm. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Babbitt?
Your Honors, the suppressed emails would have made a difference at trial. The government argued that it caught Mr. Morales red-handed, and that was not true. With the suppressed emails, the defense could have asked with certainty. Agent Kane, the government alleges that it caught Mr. Morales entering fraudulent information into a computer, but that isn't true, is it? Isn't it true that Mr. Morales' daughter was the one sitting at the computer that day? The suppressed emails
are
material.
That's what she said.
Excuse me?
That was her contribution, was it not? I mean, the email said she said that.
And we didn't have that email at trial, so we could never make those points with Agent Gaines. We didn't have the opportunity to do that. The suppressed emails are material because this kind of cross-examination.
No, but we don't know who acted. We don't have any real evidence of who was at the computer doing.
I believe the email shows that the daughter was sitting at the computer entering the fraudulent information. But even so, it is not clear on the face of the email.
She told this guy that sent the email. That's true. But
if that's not true, we still needed the opportunity. This was a critical part of the government's case. And we needed the opportunity to ask Agent Kane, the only witness from law enforcement to testify about the search. We needed to ask him these questions. And without asking him those questions, we cannot be sure in the certainty of the verdict here, Your Honor. We would ask that the court reverse and remand for a new trial or in the alternative an evidentiary hearing regarding materiality.
All right. Thank you very much. And the court thanks you and your firm as well for accepting this appointment and being of such help to your client and to the court.
Thank you.
And thanks as well to the government. We will take